Good morning. Welcome to Your Health. Anne Goldin is away on a well-deserved vacation. I'm sitting in the substitute seat. And with me in the studio today are Donna Bisdell and Jan Miller. They are occupational therapists. Also, Janine Gray, an occupational therapy assistant. They're here from, and your business name is?
Pacific Northwest Occupational Therapy.
Okay. And Jan and Donna, could you say tell us a little bit about yourselves and how you came to be in Astoria?
Well, I got here about 9 years ago. I moved to Astoria, but I moved from Pennsylvania to Portland because my brother was out here and wanted to see this side of the world. I love the East Coast, but now I love the West Coast.
And I moved from California. I just moved up the coast some. I was from the Monterey Bay area and just fell in love with Astoria and moved here around 7.5 years ago.
And Janine?
Oh, I've been a gypsy all my life, so I've been in the Northwest since the 80s and wanted a different change of scenery and knew the peninsula well. I live on the peninsula versus Astoria and came here about 8 years ago.
So you make the commute every day.
That's not too far.
Okay, so occupational therapy, and it's something that you said earlier, is it often gets confused with physical therapy. So what are each and what are the differences in emphasizing what you do?
So occupational therapy as a whole is a very broad profession. And the main objective of occupational therapy is to look at a client's activities of daily living. So that means anything that you do from sun up to sunset. And if you have an injury, an illness, or just struggling for whatever reason, and you can't perform those activities in a healthy way, in a productive way, in a satisfying way, we can look at those activities and help you get back into life. As an example, if somebody broke their shoulder and they couldn't lift up their child, we not only can help work on the shoulder, but we're also going to look at what are the body mechanics of that, what are some modified techniques to be able to handle your children and things like that.
So you just described something that would happen, a home-based problem that might happen.
To a point. I mean, you can come home and do those. You can go into the home and work with the client, or they could come out and we would do simulated types of activities that would help them understand how to take it into their home.
Which leads us back to your business, which is Northwest Occupational Therapy.
Pacific Northwest.
Pacific Northwest Occupational mm-hmm. Therapy, and that's located here in Astoria.
Correct.
How long have you been in business?
It's been a little over 4 years, and we just had an expansion about 2 months ago because our business has grown. We see from the pediatric infant stage all the way to older adults and provide a wide variety of services.
Now, how did you decide to start your business, and especially out here in the North Coast?
Mm-hmm. Well, we saw a gap in what was being offered, and the gap was in the pediatric area. There was really no pediatric program, especially none that were offering a special technique that Donna is familiar with and trained in called therapeutic listening. And we also saw a gap in what was being provided for workers that had been injured on the job and making the workplace safer. So those were the two areas that we saw really needed to be looked at and provided here in Astoria instead of people having to go to Longview or Portland.
When you talk about workplace injuries, were employers coming? Was the gap coming from employers? Did they come to you asking for this service, or was it the other way around?
Both. Mm-hmm. Actually, we have, workers that have been injured, and of course a doctor or the workers' comp insurance company would refer to us. And then we also have employers that are calling and saying, you know, we need education on the job, we need you to look at this job, because people are complaining about, muscle strains and sprains, and what can we do to make it better. So it comes from both directions.
And Donna, you were talking about therapeutic listening. What mm-hmm. is that?
With pediatric client, actually you could use it with anyone. It's a sensory integrative model. So basically we look at all the sensory systems and how it affects our body to be able to interact in the world, be able to understand our world, and be able to protect ourselves. And the auditory system is the main system that links with the vision and the movement system to help us really understand our environment. And so one of the tools with sensory integration is that you use the sensory system to help regulate your system, calm it down. If there's children that have attention deficit disorder or have sensory systems that are overloaded all the time. So the therapeutic listening program actually is the key while you're bringing in all the other sensory inputs to help kind of organize that system and help them say, okay, I can engage in this activity. I can listen to what my mom is saying and so forth.
So this is from a family therapy point of view. Am I on the right track?
Well, basically it's a neurological. If you understand how the sensory system works, it helps motor the physical part. And also our brain is what is processing all of that information. So if the processing of the information isn't right, we're doing a lot of training with the child and with the parents on how they can take in that information and utilize it to be able to focus again, be able to learn a new task. And once they get to the point where they're not overwhelmed all the time, then you can do the actual training. So this is how you get dressed. This is how you sit in your chair. This is how you eat your cereal. Because now they're not bouncing off the walls. They're able to attend to you really well. They're sleeping, they're able to tolerate a lot of information. And it's a complicated system, but the basics of it is to help the nervous system understand the environment. If we think about, you know, when you are in a room and there's all kind of noises, we are hearing those noises 100% of the time. But our brain is able to, and our nervous system is able to say, oh, relax, we don't have to listen to that, but we're in this conversation. A lot of these kids have no ability to do that. So their brain is on fire all of the time. And so these techniques help them discern what they do need to listen to so that they can be these average kids that aren't bouncing off the walls.
So where do you find the children that need your services? Is something that the schools come to you or traditional family therapists?
Yeah. We do take doctor referrals. So a lot of times, you know, it's the parents that are saying, you know, I just don't know how to control Bobby. You know, he's all over the place. He doesn't sleep. He doesn't eat. What can I do? And, you know, fortunately, we've been in the area long enough that a lot of the physicians will say, okay, why don't you try occupational therapy and we'll send you down to Pacific Northwest. And so there's that, but there's also a lot of parents, word of mouth, you know, parents say, oh yeah, you know, my kid has that problem too. Mm. And so they'll just come to us and say, you know, do you think this is something that will help? There's anybody, actually. We've gotten referrals from all different sources.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And what age range of children?
From infant to 21.
Okay, and so if a family, a parent, identified mm-hmm. a problem with the child, I think Johnny's not the rate of learning is not what it should be, and I called you, how would you initiate a session or a course?
Right. So using insurance, you need a doctor's referral. So basically, they would need to have the doctor send us a referral, and then we would get them in the system to have an evaluation. So then we would evaluate and determine where their strengths and weaknesses are and what types of therapy would really benefit them, and then have treatment that could last anywhere from 3 months to a year in some cases.
Might that be kind of difficult when a child comes in and there are these strangers and when they're feeling kind of on the spot, mm-hmm. perhaps? How do you ease that transition and make it a safe environment?
Well, you know, it's been an interesting situation because most kids that come in, the place is full with just fun things. Mm. And they walk in and immediately, which is good and bad, because when they come in and if they're bouncing off the wall, they're at every little thing and it's really hard to kind of rein them in. But for the most part, just introducing ourselves, saying, we're just going to go over here and have some fun and look at how strong you are and see what we can do to help you, that kind of stuff. And it just depends on how old they are. And the approach is really about just being right on their level. To me, that's how I approach it. And I talk to them like I would talk to their parents so that they know that this is something I want them to do, and I'm right here with you, and give them support and, you know, encourage them as much as possible. And it is about finding that right tool that keeps them engaged and also helps them know that the interest is on them.
So they're not coming from a position of fear of these strangers.
Right, right.
It sounds more like it's already a happy place to begin with.
And we really, our model was to design a place where people came and felt comfortable. And so we put a lot of effort into the colors of the wall, into the activities that we have out, what the waiting room looks like, how we greet them. I mean, we've really feel like that's the initial part of healing, no matter how old you are. And the more we can greet them in a less stressful way, the more we can help them progress and meet their goals.
Could you have an illustration of a case study an outcome, a successful outcome? Could you demonstrate something that you've done that's brought someone from a position of not functioning so well to a better outcome?
Yeah, one guy that comes to mind, he came, I'm thinking he was 9 when he first arrived, and really had no attention, internally focused all the time. So Mom and Dad had to do everything for him. Really couldn't follow directions, was not at age appropriate level for writing, for any of his self-care. And we started with him in the clinic and did the therapeutic listening program as well as other sensory programs. By the time he left, when it finally came to discharge, and for him to be on his own, he had great eye contact. He would have conversation with you. Mom was starting to give him chores at home. There were still a lot of issues surrounding him being able to be independent, but he had made leaps and bounds in that sense. We were able to help him regulate his system enough that he could take in new information, be able to process it, and then be able to do something. Whereas before, nothing was going in, or if it was going in, it wasn't being processed for him to even know that his world existed around him, outside of him. So it was really a neat experience to watch him go through these steps and to be a much more functional. He tolerated things a lot more. He was very tactically or touch sensitive, auditorily very had a lot of trouble with loud noises and certain noises, and so he moved through that and was doing well at school, the last I heard, and just doing a lot of things at home that they were pretty excited about.
So it sounds like you were giving this child some help with specific skills. And how did you help with the interaction with the parents and the school?
Well, mostly the parents. So the parents were there, and really a big part of anything that we do has to do with home programs. So we only see them a certain amount of time. After that time, there's all those hours. So you have to really establish nice home programs that help facilitate all the things that you are trying to accomplish, and a lot of education for the parents. You know, they often come into the session and see things. They often, you know, we'll spend lots of time with them talking about how to structure things, how to set things up, how to carry out whatever the activity is.
We're talking about occupational therapy with two therapists from Pacific Northwest Occupational Therapy, Donna Bisdell and Jan Miller. We also have Janine Gray, who is a occupational therapy assistant. And I'd like to move on to Jan. And earlier we were talking about workers' programs. And part of the reason you established this business was to fulfill a need in the community. And how did you find out about that need?
Well, I think both Donna and myself had worked in work programs in the past in, you know, the East Coast for her and California for myself. And when we both established ourselves in Astoria, we realized there really wasn't a comprehensive program here. So we took our past experience and we then went and became certified in a couple of the techniques, like a physical or functional capacity eval, which is rating what the injured employee can do right now. And then you look at what the job description is and is there a match or not. If not, you know, then you would look at, well, can we use a transitional program? Is there something they could do that's a little bit modified or lighter duty, and then slowly condition on the job and get them back to their regular job? So that was, you know, one thing is we just, you know, saw that that program wasn't happening here. And since we both had that experience in the past, we wanted to be able to offer that. The other area that we went off and got certified in was in the functional job analysis and pre-work screening. And that is something that employers are seeking mainly to look at that they're hiring the right person for the job. Many times we will have somebody come in, we'll do the pre-work testing, and the person themselves will say, whoa, I didn't know I was going to have to lift this much. I don't think I want to do this kind of work. So many times the person themselves realize it is not the kind of work for them. But it also then ensures that if they are, you know, able to do that, it ensures that, yes, you know, they are capable of lifting 50 pounds if that's truly what they have to do in the job. So it gives the employer better information that, yes, they are hiring somebody that is capable of doing that work. So that was the other area that, you know, so we're looking at both the injured worker and what the employer needs in order to keep them safe. And we also do work hardening, work conditioning. So if somebody is not able to go back to the original job, but maybe has the potential, or it's been determined that no, that's not at all the job that they can go back to, but they need to be conditioned, because many times after they've been injured, they're not doing anything and they're getting out of shape. So they can come in and we will start an exercise program with them. If we know what the job is going to be, we'll do what we call work simulation, where they're actually practicing doing the techniques and the skills and the movements that they have to do on the job. So it's a very active We also educate, you know, so an active educational kind of learning situation for them, as well as their conditioning so that they'll be safer when they get back to work.
So it sounds like you're involved in all aspects from some pre-screening, pre-employment throughout the employment process.
Right, right.
And I had no idea that you'd be to the pre-screening type level. So do employers work with you in developing job descriptions?
Yeah, actually, you know, most employers that we have contact with, the job descriptions are pretty vague. You know, you have to hear, see, lifts 50 pounds, and many times it's like, where did that come from? You know, it may not even be really accurate. So we go out and we do what we call a functional job analysis, and we take that job and really pick it apart. I mean, you know, how much are they lifting, and from what level to where, and how many times an hour, and, you know, really look specifically at all of that. Because legally, you know, with the American Disabilities Act and some of the other legal ramifications, you can't just arbitrarily test. It has to be specific to what is essential in that specific job. And so, you know, we then come back and design a test that would best represent what that job is required. There's certain steps we have to go through where we have to then pull employees that are currently on that job to come and do the test and let us know, yes, this test feels pretty much like the energy level I put out when I'm at work, in order for it to really even be valid. So there's a lot of steps that we go through to get to that level, and that protects then the employer from any kind of legal ramifications. And it also, you know, lets the employee know that, you know, they're being tested for exactly what they're going to be expected to do.
That sounds like a very valuable service. Yeah. So you're here from pre-employment through employment, but if someone is actually injured on the job, mm-hmm. who approaches you, the employee or the employer?
You know, many times it's the physician or the workers' comp claims manager. We're working more and more on trying to get the employers to be more actively involved with managing the whole coordination of care for their injured worker, because we find the outcomes are much more positive if the employer stays involved, and it becomes more of a win-win situation. And if we can get that worker back to work in a quick amount of time, whether it's something that's light duty, the success of them getting back into the workforce is much greater. You know, for every 3 months that they're off of work, the percentage goes down very significantly as to if they will ever get back to a job. So we really encourage the employers to be involved with that.
How often are you successful in keeping someone placed, even in a lighter duty position?
Oh, actually, we've been about 100% wow. successful. Yeah, that they either get back into the original job or something to do with that job, or they have already been working with a vocational counselor at towards a specific job training that they're going to do. But yeah, the people we have seen have all gone into something productive.
Okay, well, Janine, I'm going to turn to you now. Earlier you were talking about occupation of life.
Yes.
And your personal approach to occupational therapy. So if someone has been injured, are you the next person that they're likely to see?
Well, it mostly depends. I work in home health therapy. So, and in Pacific County, and Pacific County has got one of the highest plus 65 populations in the whole state. So a lot of my clients are retired, and I'm seeing them in their homes. I work for Harbors Home Health and Hospice out of Pacific County. They've been there about 30 years now, providing services. And these are folks who have either had a stroke, something, a debilitating event, possibly injuries at home, broke their hip. Or in many, many cases, it's a failure to thrive. That's a kind of a generic term for a lot of the elders. And, you know, the move is now, of course, with boomers to age in place, and a lot of these folks want to stay home because they all have the massive fear of being shipped off either on an ice floe by the kids or to, you know, a nursing home. So we want to keep them at home and be safe. And what more logical place to practice occupational therapy, the occupation of your life, than in your house, around your own stuff, working in your environment to make you safe.
Mm-hmm. So how do you typically get called into a home?
I work as an assistant. I do not do initial evaluations. The registered OTs do that. So I work with a registered occupational therapist who gets the initial call. She does a standard evaluation and then designs a program for us to follow, whether it's an exercise program or a combination of that and practicing your ADLs, which is activities of daily living skills within the home. And so we go into the home and set up a schedule with them and find out what is most important to them, what things do you want to be able to do yourself or accomplish. And there's a lot of caregiving training included, whether it's a paid caregiver, a family member, or such. And we teach them too. So it can be something as simple as just basic range of motion to keep you from getting stiff after surgery, to using adaptive gadgets so that you can dress yourself easier, evaluating the home for safety, getting rid of things that will make them trip, and dark hallways and rugs and things like that, rearranging the kitchen as need be, making recommendations for bringing them rails and ramps, things like that. And just overall making them as safe as possible in their own environment.
Okay, so it sounds like you work with all stages of life, mm-hmm. from pediatric working years on through elderly assistance.
That's right. Yes.
Mm-hmm. If someone wants to get into the occupation of occupational therapy, what kind of training did you all take?
Yeah, actually, it has changed some because
massively.
I've been in therapy for a number
We're
of
old
years.
School.
But basically, it now is a master's program, and the closest school here would be the University of Pacific in Portland area. And there is what you would call a field placement, internships, whatever, you know, work.
Clinical.
Yeah,
type
clinical,
of work.
Where then you would come out to a facility and actually work along with a therapist and eventually have your own caseload, you know, with that supervision of the therapist so that you're on the job learning too. So we have had some students that have come and worked with us at our facility here, and I think we have another one coming in January. But, it's a 3-year master's program now, and you know, that's after you have all your general education anatomy, physiology, all that stuff.
Is it a specific program? Do you have to be like an RN first before you get into this?
You can go right out of high school into college. You just need to have those prerequisites that Jan was talking about, and then once you've accomplished that, then you go right into the occupational therapy program where you do classes, and then you do different levels of field work in between your years, and then the main ones that you spend like you're on a job.
Okay, and what would you say the job outlook is for occupational therapy?
Actually, I mean, it's rated as one of the 10 top jobs because of the aging population. And people wanting, like Janine said, to stay in their own home. So I think, you know, especially home health and the safety and the, you know, driver's education and those types of things are going to be real important. And occupational therapy will be a need.
Okay. That's right.
Well, thank you. For,
okay.
We're out of time.
We're
sorry.
Out of time.
But thank you very much for coming in today.
Thank you.
Janine Gray, Donna Bisdell, and Jan Miller. And if you came in late to the show, we'll have these interviews up on the web in just about a half hour. And we'll have links to Harbor's Home Health and Hospice and also to Pacific Northwest Occupational Therapy. Thank you very much for coming in today.
Thank you.
Thank you.